Readers Entertainment Radio presents Book Lights with your host, author Lisa Kessler. Book Lights, where we're shining a light on good books.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to another week. This is Book Lights Radio. We're back. I was off for a couple of weeks because I was moving. Oh, the worst thing ever. I hate moving. I'm sure many of you out there feel the same way. But anyway, I have my table all set up and my computer's ready to go, and hopefully my puppies will be quiet, because today we have author T. O'Fallon on, and T. writes romantic suspense. And I've been chatting with her before the show started. Oh, my gosh, I can't wait for you to meet her. If you haven't read T yet, I'm going to read her bio so that you get a little background. T. O'Fallon is the author of the Federal Canine series and the NYPD Blue and Gold series. T has been a federal agent for 23 years and is now a police investigator, giving her hands-on experience in the field of law enforcement that she combines with her love of romantic suspense. T's job affords her the unique opportunity to work with heroic men and women in law enforcement on a daily basis. When not writing, T enjoys cooking, gardening, chocolate, lychee martinis, which I probably just killed. I don't know if that's how you say it, and all creatures canine. T enjoys hearing from readers, and I did put a link to her website right there on the Blog Talk site. So if you're listening live, you can click that right now and join up on her newsletter. And her website's really fun, too, so go check it out for sure. So are you there, T?
I'm here, Lisa.
Yay! I'm so glad it worked out. For those who don't know, when we're doing the podcast, we're trying to always organize when we can get together and do it. And T works, and there was snow, and so she got a snow day. So it worked out perfect, right?
Absolutely. I'm happy to be here.
Yay! So you have a new book out. It's called Armed and Ready, right?
Yes, it's the second book in my Federal Canine series.
I love it. And these books, if you guys haven't seen them yet, the covers are amazing, and they have dogs on them. I love dogs. How much fun was it adding a dog to these?
It was great fun. I've loved dogs my entire life. So when my editor suggested I write a canine series, I absolutely jumped at it with no hesitation. Threw together the quickest proposal for a series that I've ever done, and she took it to acquisitions, and the rest is history.
Oh, that's so cool. And have you've worked in law enforcement. Have you worked on a canine unit before?
I have never been a canine officer, and that is the biggest regret I have of my entire career, that someone didn't pick up on my uber love of dogs and channel me in that direction. So I've never been a canine officer.
But now you can live the dream through the book.
Absolutely. I can make up whatever I want.
That's right. You can have the best canine partner ever.
Right? How many people get to take their partners home at the end of the day, right? But if you're a canine officer,
right,
you do take your partner home.
Oh, that's so cool. The dog actually lives with the officer?
Yes, the officer is responsible for that dog's care basically 24/7, and they do get funding from whatever agency they work for to feed the dog, care for the dog, vet bills. But the dog also becomes a part of their family as well.
So do they keep the dogs when the dogs retire? I've always wondered about that.
Usually they do. I believe there are some exceptions. So, for example, let's say an officer retires and the dog is still fairly young, you know, a few years,
mm-hmm.
That dog is still active duty. So the dog would probably be reassigned to someone else.
Sadness, but I understand.
Right.
They invest.
Right.
I went to an RT convention, and they had a panel of ATF officers, alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, and they brought one of their canine officers, and they had stashed around the room all these bullet casings, and this dog was amazing, went and found every single one and all this kind of thing, and they were talking about all the training. These dogs, they spend a lot of money training these dogs, don't they?
Yes, they do. I mean, the dog to begin with can cost upwards of $20,000, depending on where it comes from, depending on how well trained it is when the agency acquires it. And then, just like human officers, the canines have to go through periodic training to stay current in the various disciplines. So, for example, the canine dogs that are searching for firearms or shell casings, they have to be trained periodically to make sure that they are proficient, just like a human officer has to go through firearms training to shoot proficiently.
Wow. Does that play into your books, or are the canines already all up to date and trained in the books?
Well, the books don't really focus on the training. However, I had the unique opportunity to spend an entire day with the Massachusetts State Police Canine Unit. Through my connections, someone hooked me up with them for an entire day during one of their training sessions. So this was attended by Massachusetts State Police canine officers and local canine officers from a half a dozen or so local departments. And I got to watch them, video them, photograph them, pepper them with all kinds of questions about how their dogs go through various searches, whether it's for shell casings or people. And they did a lot of scenarios in which the officer is talking to someone and all of a sudden the situation goes bad and the canine has to attack. And they would have someone in what's called a bite suit, which is a seriously padded suit from head to toe. And the role-playing officer, you know, kind of presents an arm or a leg and the canine latches on. And then when the scenario is done, the officer has to out the dog so the dog will release. So it was fascinating to see how well trained they are and how well attuned they are to their human handlers and how responsive they are. And because this training day took place in Massachusetts and these guys were so helpful, Springfield, Massachusetts ultimately became the backdrop for Armed and Ready. That's where the story takes place.
Oh, very
and,
cool.
And I decided, you know, these guys were so great. How can I not make my hero a Massachusetts State Police officer? So hence, that's what's happened. And I also met this incredibly beautiful black German Shepherd canine who works for the Chicopee, Massachusetts Police Department. And his name was Paco. So Paco was the inspiration for Saxon, who is the canine hero of Armed and Ready.
Oh, cool. And can you tell people, just like in a nutshell, what Armed and Ready is about and why they need to read it right now?
Sure.
Besides the cute dog.
Absolutely. The dog is beautiful on the cover. I'm not sure who's more beautiful, the state police sergeant or the dog. So if you love reading romantic suspense, if you love dogs, if you love tortured heroes. I do tend to torture my guys and, you know, call me cool
for
doing it.
Oh, I'm a sucker for tortured heroes.
Right? I think it makes for a much more a rich story, a deeply emotional story, and that the journey that the hero has to take in order to find his happily ever after is that much more fulfilling, and it really helps the readers to connect and root for the hero and the heroine. So the more I torture them, the more people seem to enjoy the book.
So is the heroine, like, does he have to protect her, or how did they get thrown together?
Yes, for this story, the heroine finds herself in a unique and frightening scenario. Imagine you are inadvertently involved in a federal investigation and you are completely innocent. However, there is substantial evidence to indicate that you are guilty. So,
well, that
you
would
are
suck.
More, yes, to say the least. So that is her story. Now, she is a strong woman, and she has gone through a lot of life changes. She's left her world of finances to open up her dream job, which is called the Dog Park Cafe. The Dog Park Cafe is a restaurant set in a suburb of Springfield, Massachusetts. It caters to humans in terms of great food and a great setting, but it also caters to dogs in that there's this big, beautiful dog run outside. So this restaurant is kind of the focal point of the story. A lot of what happens is centered around there. So you've got dog, great food, and of course, due to the plot, I don't want to spoil it, other than to say it's a money laundering federal task force investigation that's going on. And my hero is on that task force. That's how they meet.
Oh, okay.
And they have to work together. She doesn't have a choice. She's in big trouble. So that's all the backdrop of the story.
Fun. It sounds like a great. It's money laundering, but is it you know, life and death stakes? I write paranormal, so I love when, you know, before together the world's gonna end. So, but usually in romantic suspense, somebody's after you. You know, you have a target on your back. Is it that kind of thing?
Absolutely. The basis for the plot of this story also comes from Springfield, Massachusetts. While I was there, I asked the officers, are there any crimes that are unique to Springfield or unique to Massachusetts? And it turns out that Springfield, Massachusetts has a very high shooting homicide rate. Springfield is a city, but compared to a lot of the other cities in the Northeast, it's much smaller, and yet it has a very high shooting homicide rate. And I asked, them, what do they think this is from? What's the basis for this problem?
Yeah, that's weird.
And between their answers and doing a little internet research, as we all do as authors, there are gang-related connections to a lot of these shootings. Then
Springfield, Massachusetts.
Right? Who knew?
Yeah,
and then coincidentally, right
wow.
around the same time, I was attending a 3-day money laundering school, and I'm sitting mm-hmm. there getting this great idea for a task force, gangs, money laundering, sort of a story, and that's what ultimately formed the background story. So you've got
wow.
weapons, you've got gangs, you've got a federal task force, you've got money laundering, and then this poor heroine gets wrapped up in this whole thing.
And a dog, a cute black dog.
A beautiful black dog.
Yes. Oh, my gosh, I love that. And as writers, it's always so funny to me where ideas hit. It is almost always in an inconvenient time. Because you're at a workshop for work trying to focus to do something, and your writer brain suddenly goes, hey, here's a good idea.
That's exactly what happened. It's like a light bulb goes on in your head, and if I'm sitting there, I should be taking notes about the training for my job, my day job, and I find out
right.
all the notes I'm making are ideas for my next book.
It's funny how our writer brains work. They're really funny. So what is your favorite breed of dog? You said you love all kinds of canines. Do you have dogs?
I don't at the moment. Sadly, I'm dogless almost for the
Aww.
First time in my life. Yeah. But I dream about puppies just about every night, so I have a feeling that that's going to change.
Puppies in your future.
Yeah. But I'm kind of a sucker for Jigo figure shepherds and Belgian Malinois, the Belgian sheepdog. And the dogs
wow,
I had
you like
most
big
recently
dogs.
Were a brother-sister Belgian sheepdog duo. And you can see them on my website if you go there. I've got a couple pictures peppered in here and there.
Aw. And you live somewhere cold enough. I'm in San Diego, so sheepdogs would just, like, swelter to death. But But you're where it gets cold, so they can have long hair and be happy.
They do have fairly thick coats. They probably weigh about 50 pounds, but they look a lot bigger because of this big, beautiful coat. And people hear sheepdog and they think Old English sheepdog, but Belgian sheepdogs are more like a light-boned German shepherd with a beautiful long hair, black coat. They're just stunning animals.
Oh, okay. Wow. Okay. Well, I'm going to have to go look on your website and see. I'm a dog freak too, but I like little Boston Terriers. I just like they're so high energy and they're so happy to see you every time you come home. They're the sweetest. But also I live in San Diego, so they're short-haired dogs, so they're not so miserable when it's hot all the time.
Understandable.
So what kind of, when you were talking about the book and the working with the canine group there at the police department, I, of course, was immediately thinking of Turner and Hooch. That's one of my favorite police dog movies.
Right.
But do you have any favorites that I haven't seen?
There's another one. I think it might just be called Canine or Canine Cop. It stars Jim Belushi. And there's a German Shepherd in this movie called Jerry Lee, after Jerry Lee Lewis. And if you haven't seen it, this is a great canine movie.
I haven't seen it.
You should check it out.
Okay, I will. Jerry Lee Lewis. Cute. Okay. Yeah, I love finding new movies and TV from other authors. So I just finished binge watching Lucifer on one author's suggestion. And then another, I had Rebecca Zanetti on a little while back, and she was like, you have to watch the Santa Fe Diet. I can't remember the one that's the, she's a zombie, Drew Barrymore. Anyway, so that one's on my list. But do you binge watch shows? Is there a police show I'm missing?
I do watch a lot of Blue Bloods, which is about the
NYPD.
That
was good.
Mm-hmm. It's good, and anything
Tom
Selleck in. I do think it's pretty realistic, and I recognize living in New York. I recognize a lot of what's going on in the New York area, and I see that on the show. And it seems fairly accurately reflected. And I see some things that are probably not procedurally correct, but I think that's true of any police show or any movie about federal agents.
Right.
You know, they want to keep it real, but at the same time, they're there to entertain. So there are times when they take creative license and do what they have to do to get viewers.
Right. My cousin is a police officer, and she was a detective for a while, and she came to my RWA group to talk and answer writer questions. And she was talking about that at some point you've got to just acknowledge that if you keep it too real, it's going to be super boring. But she was like, you know, you have to get a warrant, and you have to, and that doesn't really happen at midnight when you call the judge and wake them up. That just doesn't usually happen. And so anyway,
that's,
she was like, but none of
that's
that is good fiction. So
most of my job as a federal agent, I shouldn't say most of it, but a lot of it was writing reports. And the reports are written because we're out doing a lot of interviews almost every day. And that's a big chunk of what goes into the probable cause to get a search warrant or an arrest warrant. But your friend is absolutely right. That's not a typical day. And you don't normally get a warrant at midnight, which makes for good drama. although, one of the most memorable things that happened to me, I lived for a few years out in Colorado. And I had put together several affidavits for warrants to be served on the same day. And all of a sudden, out of the blue, I get a phone call from the prosecutor at around 6:30 at night. So I'm home, I'm in my slippers, I'm having a glass of wine. And she says, Kara, the judge is ready for you to sign the warrant right now. And I said, what do you mean right now? I'm at home in my slippers having a glass of wine. So it turns out it turns out I was one of the first federal agents, certainly in the District of Colorado, I don't know about the country, to swear out a warrant over the phone. Because normally what happens is you go to the judge's chambers, he or she reads your affidavit, and, you know, you raise your right hand, you swear that everything in the affidavit is true, and then you sign it. So immediately on the phone, the judge comes on, and, you know, he says, Special Agent O'Fallon, you know, you swear everything in the affidavit is true. I do. And he says, raise your right hand. Now, meanwhile, I'm holding the phone in my left hand, and I'm holding this glass of wine in my right hand. So without thinking, I just raised that glass of wine in the air and swore out the affidavit.
There you go. You toasted that affidavit.
You know, I didn't even think to put the glass of wine down, because when a federal judge tells you to do something, you do it.
You just do it right then. I love it. So did that mean that you had to put your shoes on and go arrest somebody?
Well, not at 6:30 at night, no. That's all part of the Hollywood lore. Most warrants.
Right.
Most federal warrants are not on the fly like that. Most of them are carefully planned and executed in advance. Not all the time. Granted, there are exigent circumstances. But usually everything is carefully controlled and executed at the time that is good for us, not the bad guys.
Right. And that time is not at 6:30 at night in your slippers with wine.
Normally, when we're planning ahead, we'll usually execute warrants first thing in the morning.
That way you have all day to go get the bad guys, right?
Well, you usually want to either catch people at home or catch them in their car or serve the warrant at a facility first thing in the morning so that you have all day to do the follow-up. And if it's a search warrant at a facility, those can often take a long time, so you want to make sure you have all day.
I see. So what is, do you have like something that is the story that you always tell? Did you have one exciting case where, you know, you got to tase someone? I always go to the taser. If my cousin ever listens to this, she'll die, because I'm always like, did you get to tase someone? Can I watch? She's like, no, not unless you want to be tased. No, I don't want to be tased. I want to watch.
No, but, I've never been tased.
But do you have a...
I've never been tased, and it's interesting because I believe most officers who carry a taser have to be tased. They want their officers to know what the physical effects are like. Likewise,
right.
if you're going to carry pepper spray, you have to be sprayed so you can carry it.
No,
and
really?
Yes, I've been sprayed. I've been sprayed several times for different agencies.
Oh, more than once.
Another interesting thing is. Thank you. Some people react stronger than others. But what's interesting is we're carrying firearms, but they're not requiring us to get shot to know what it's like.
Well, that's true.
Which is a good thing.
You'd probably be harder to find new recruits if you knew you were going to be shot.
Most likely that's correct.
Oh, my gosh. So in your line of work, though, you don't usually have to chase people down and tase them.
Normally, we don't let the scenario get to the point where someone needs to be tased or someone needs to be sprayed. Again, it's not like Hollywood. Most times, you're going to arrest someone. It's carefully controlled. I mean, not all the time. You can't control every aspect, but you try. And, you know, we're good at what we do, so we normally don't let something get to the point where we have to implement some kind of a use of force weapon.
So you try to keep it so you don't have to tase anyone.
Of course. We don't want to use any kind of a weapon on someone. So we do our best to control the situation.
So how did you go from, you know, law enforcement and all that? How did you get into romance writing? What was your writer's journey like?
When I was about 14, our family used to go to Hilton Head, North Carolina for vacation every year. And I always had a fascination with the Bibles that are in the top drawer of one of the bedside tables in every single hotel we'd ever been to. So the first thing I do when we get there is I open up the drawer, and sitting right next to the Holy Bible was this paperback. And I picked it up, and I wound up reading it over vacation, and it was some kind of a romance novel. I don't remember who the author was. I don't remember anything about it, but I remember I really liked it. And I was pleasantly surprised because no one in my family read romance novels or ever told me I should go read one. So that was the beginning. I fell in love with them. I get home, I start taking them out of the library, and I shifted from historicals to contemporaries, and then jump ahead another 10 or 20 years. I'm finding there are a lot of books out there, and they're not all as enjoyable as that first one I read when I was 14. So I started thinking, you know, maybe I can write one. And then I got into law enforcement, and I started reading more suspense novels. So it just seemed like the perfect blending of both to incorporate my job into the stories. And some people say write what you know. So I try to incorporate certainly the procedure that I've become accustomed to and certain little things I pick up, whether it's an interesting character or I'm in money laundering training and I want to write a story about money laundering. And it took a while to get an editor, but my first book came out in 2016. That was the first of the NYPD Blue and Gold series. And there's actually a dog in each of those three novels as well, even though those are not canine stories. I guess that was a little hint of things to come, even though I didn't realize it.
You and the dogs again.
Right. So now the rest is history, and I'm hoping to write as many canine books as I can.
Yeah. Do you know how many books are planned for the series?
There are currently four, although the publishing company could add more books to the contract. And Armed and Ready is going to be the first of my books to come out as an audiobook, so I'm really excited about that.
Exciting! My books came out in audio last year, and it was so exciting to hear that the audio narrators are so amazing. It gives a whole different dimension to your book, so congratulations.
Thank you. I'm really excited, and I can't wait to hear it.
Yeah, very cool. Do you know when it will be out?
I don't. This is new right now. My understanding is the audio company is working on the book as we speak.
Oh, exciting. Okay, I'm excited for you. So we are running out of time, but before we go, how do you like readers to connect with you? I told them they can sign up for your newsletter on your website, but are you on Facebook, Twitter? Where should they find you?
The best way, certainly, you can always go to my website, just teofallon.com. That's T-E-E, O-Fallon, no apostrophe. I'm on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Again, just T.O. Fallon. You can stick my name in the web browser, and all of these sites should come up. You can find me on Amazon. You can find me on Goodreads. Of course, I do love hearing from folks. There's a link on my website. You can send me an email. You can sign up for newsletters to keep abreast of new releases and the contests that I run periodically. So definitely head there, take a look. Take a look at all the dog pictures I have on my site.
Yeah, I was going to say, people should send you pictures of their dogs and maybe they'll be characters in books.
I'd love that. I often post things online on social media about dogs. Every Monday for me is Puppy Monday, and I post a new puppy picture.
Oh, fun. Okay. Well, thanks so much for being on today, T. It was great to meet you.
Thanks for
joining us on Book Lights. be sure to connect with us at